come to order. Representative Hornstein, welcome.
Hi.
And just to remind members, there is no meeting on Thursday. Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I appreciate very much your hearing House File 1324. And I'm not familiar with what the proper motion might be.
Okay. Well, we don't have a quorum yet, so maybe we will just start with where you were when you were three and your favorite game.
Perfect. I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, my hometown. I lived there till I was 18. And what was the second question?
What was your favorite game?
My favorite game, well, in Cincinnati there was really only one game, baseball. I don't know if I was playing it at that early age, so I would just say that probably something involving a ball. Mr. Chair and members, this is the Early Childhood Committee. My earliest memory of a early childhood educational experience was a nursery school, and I had a coat hanger that had a bear sticker. A very early memory of early childhood.
That's the biggest awe I think we've gotten.
You don't forget the bear sticker. So.
And what year was that, Representative Hornstein? When exactly were you born?
I was born in
1959.
It was in the early 60s. A true child of the 60s. Okay. Which brings us to House File 1324. I imagine... are you going to move to...
We don't have a quorum yet, but if you can go ahead with your testimony,
okay.
That'd be great.
Okay, this is a bill that its genesis is in my district with a constituent who was on the Minneapolis and still is on the Minneapolis School Board who brought this issue to my attention. We heard it in the last biennium, and I believe that the committee approved it, but there was some funding issues, and so we're back here again. This time, the primary advocate is a Heading Home Hennepin organization, and they'll tell you a little about their group and why they support this bill. Members, it's just a very simple bill with one section allowing the commissioner to waive the GED test fees for eligible individuals who are homeless, but you know, I have, again, one testifier who can tell you a little about the need and answer any questions that members of the committee have.
Thank you, and we do have a quorum now, so I move that House File 1324 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Thank you. My name is Matthew Ayers. I'm a program analyst at Hennepin County. I also serve as the project manager for the 10-year plan to end homelessness entitled Heading Home Hennepin. This plan is part of a broader effort across the state of Minnesota, including 8 regional plans and the state's business plan to end long-term homelessness. All of these Heading Home plans have a few main components, including housing, outreach, prevention, and self-sufficiency. And this last piece, self-sufficiency, is really aiming at rising up people who are experiencing homelessness and giving them the tools they need to succeed. This is the best way to ensure that they'll never again experience the cycle of homelessness, and that's why I'm here today. The bill that you have before you is for waiving the test fees for GEDs for people who are currently homeless and staying in emergency shelter. Currently, there are 50 test sites across the state that issue the battery of tests for the general equivalency test. Those test sites charge between $50 and $100 for each test, with retests costing up to $20. This can be extremely cost prohibitive for people who are experiencing homelessness in Minnesota. In 2007, over 10,000 people took the GED test in Minnesota, but it is unclear how many of those people were experiencing homelessness when they took it. Minnesota has a nationally recognized online GED test preparation program called GEDI. This tool is free to all who are eligible and prepares individuals for the battery of tests included in the GED. While the test preparation program may be easily attainable, the actual test may not be. For an individual who is homeless and staying in the emergency shelter, trying to gain stable employment and a safe place to live, $50 to $100 can be an unattainable amount. This cost is often too much for homeless serving agencies to pay as well, leaving little or no options for someone who could greatly benefit and need the GED test. According to Wilder Research's 2006 Homeless in Minnesota study, there are approximately 9,300 people in Minnesota on any given night that are experiencing homelessness. Of the individuals 18 and over, 26% of them did not have a high school diploma or a GED, and that number is about 1,500 when you take the adults and the 26% of them. This is a population that's often living on a part-time minimum wage work and will not likely have the luxury to spend a large part of their monthly income to take this test. However, the availability of these waivers would allow those who are homeless and not working to create realistic goals while in shelter, and would allow those who do have employment to improve their income and give them the tools to become more self-sufficient. It's unclear how many of the estimated 1,500 people who are experiencing homelessness and eligible for this GED waiver would seek to take the test, but the benefits are clear. Studies have shown that average dropout earns $7,000 less annually than the average high school or GED graduate. The gap is even greater when you include some college in there. Encouraging people to attain a GED by removing barriers will help individuals increase wages and employment, leading to housing stability, and will ultimately reduce the use of shelter and other emergency services. This bill is one step in encouraging people to take charge of their situations and to end homelessness in our state by giving them the tools they need to succeed. We have two other speakers who are going to speak in favor of this. The first is Steve Kramer, who's the Executive Director of People for Pride and Living at the Minneapolis Employment Program.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
For the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Steve Kramer. I'm the Executive Director of Project for Pride and Living, a Twin Cities nonprofit organization. Thank you very much. I'll be brief in my remarks. PPL offers a variety of services geared to helping low-income families and individuals become more self-sufficient. One of the areas that we do work is employment and training. We operate two learning centers at Franklin and Chicago, and Franklin and Nicollet in South Minneapolis. Many of the people who access our employment and training services at those locations fit the definition of homelessness as defined in Representative Hornstein's legislation or proposed bill. One thing that we routinely do, Mr. Chairman and committee members, is do an assessment of where folks who walk in seeking our services are at from a literacy standpoint between reading and math. And what we find is that about 30% of the people, again, many of whom fit the definition in this bill, are test at 6th grade or below. About 30% test at 12th grade or above. And, of course, there's a spread in the middle. And so one of the things that we do is offer adult basic education services at these two learning centers to help people begin to move towards greater literacy if they're in that lower category. And that ultimately can point them towards earning a GED if they don't have that credential, if they don't have a high school diploma. We certainly know, as Matthew indicated, that fees associated with the ultimate testing to achieve GED credential, if folks don't have that, is a barrier to people who have little or no income and who have other priorities to address whatever income they do have towards. So, In that respect, this bill would be enormously helpful to folks that we see on a daily basis. And I don't have to tell you that in today's economy, having as basic a credential as a high school diploma or, in the alternative, a GED is absolutely essential in the work we do to then help people find a job, be placed in a situation where they can begin to earn a higher wage and move towards greater economic self-sufficiency in a position where they can not only take care of their own needs and the needs of their family, but become contributing members to the larger community. So I think this is an important and helpful step towards that ultimate goal that I know we all share as members of this community. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Paul Ramsauer is also here from the Youth Guarantee, the program director.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chairman, committee members. My name is Paul Ramsauer. I'm a program supervisor of the Educational Services Area at YouthLink in Minneapolis. I have just a short statement. The vision of YouthLink is to be the place where the end of homelessness and the end of poverty begin for the young people we serve. For more than 30 years, the agency has provided multifaceted services to homeless, precariously housed young people. This includes street outreach, crisis intervention, education, health and wellness, and housing services. More than 1,400 unduplicated young people visited YouthLink last year, and more than 3,500 contacts were made with youth on the street. We know that education is one way to break the cycle of homelessness and poverty. Completion of a high school diploma or GED are critical milestones for the young people we serve. In our latest annual report, 104 young people participated in our educational program. Almost 37% received their GED, and 62% of these young people enrolled in post-secondary learning. Of these, 56% specifically enrolled at Minneapolis Community and Technical College, who's a key collaborator with YouthLink. The best way to explain the significance of having access to a GED is to tell you about Broderick. Broderick was contacted through the YouthLink Street Outreach Program. He worked on his GED and completed it last year, all the time trying to survive and find shelter. YouthLink had to search for funds to pay Broderick's GED fees so he'd complete the testing. Without this, he wouldn't have finished. The good news is that Broderick did finish and is now enrolled in MCPC. For youth such as Broderick, the fee for GED completion often stands in the way of their pathway to a brighter future as a result of completing this educational milestone. Waiving the test fee for youth that are sheltered or unhoused opens a door of opportunity for these young people, a door that can lead to further post-secondary training, employment, and self-sufficiency as a productive member of our communities. Your support of this bill will help make a difference in the lives of sheltered or unhoused youth. And just the end, at the end of the year at YouthLink, we honor those that have accomplished their GED by holding a graduation ceremony. The 39 young people put on caps and gowns and walk with their class to our ceremony. It's a moving and inspiring time that honors these hardworking young people who have made the most of the challenging cards they were dealt. Your support of this bill helps us to ensure that sheltered or homeless young people are dealt a full deck in terms of educational opportunity and future self-sufficiency. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for your work. Representative Diskin, we have one more testifier. Do you want to ask a question now, or do you mind waiting? It's up to you.
Mr. Chair, I can wait.
I was just going to ask a quick question of the testifier. Just,
okay.
Representative North. You mentioned 39 that graduated, and I've been to some of these graduation ceremonies myself, and it is a very moving experience, and they really appreciate it. They appreciate that diploma probably more than the students who go through the traditional way. My question is, of the 30, you said 39,
yes.
Right? Of the 39, are they all homeless, or what percentage of those folks would have been homeless?
All of the youth that YouthLink serves are homeless or precariously housed. The specific language in this bill, I can't attest to how many of those 39, of those specific 39 were in shelters
mm-hmm.
at that particular time. A lot of kids who are also couch hopping or living in supportive housing or various and sundry methods to stay off the street. So I can't attest to specifically how many of those.
That's fine. Have. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ramsauer, is YouthLink a 501c3?
Yes, it is.
All right. Representative, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Hornstein, would you know if People for Pride in Living is also a 501c3?
Yes, it is. Mr. Chair, okay. Representative Diskin, yes, it is.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have one more testifier, I believe. Is Tom Crichton-Heitzum here? Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Tom Sitchin-Heitzum, Legislative Chair, Literacy, Minnesota.
Thank you.
The Chair, Committee Members, Representative Hornstein. As a general rule, we are really in favor of GEDPs for everybody being completely subsidized. And some states have taken the tack of choosing to pay the GEDPs for everybody the first time they take the test, which if the state were in a better fiscal place, we would really like them to do. I'm hoping at some point in the future you might be able to, the legislature, when finances improve, might be able to consider that. We do have, and I feel very odd saying this as both a social worker and an educator, some practical questions about how this might be implemented. So I'd like to give just a couple of background facts that will maybe provide a little bit of context to things that would need to be dealt with and answered if this were to pass. The first thing is that the commissioner does not set GED testing fees. Each testing center sets the fees themselves and pays for them through a combination of fees charged to the people taking the GED test and some of their ABE monies. So it's a little bit unclear whether the commissioner really has the authority to say to a private testing a testing center, you have to waive the fees without funding that. So if there was a fiscal note that would cover the cost, that would be wonderful. But if there isn't, it would really be a non-funded mandate and would leave the testing centers unable to meet their mandate. Probably the practical impact is some of the testing centers that test a lot of people from outside their service areas would stop doing so because they just wouldn't have the funding to do it. The second thing is that if testing centers are forced to or told they must waive the fees for some of their applicants, what will happen is that they will raise the fees for other people to make up that money. And nearly all of the people taking the GEDs, if they're not homeless, in our experience, are very low-income people. So in an effort to meet the needs of one group of very worthy GED takers, we may actually be inconveniencing a whole another group who will have to pay higher fees in order to be able to take their test. So we're a little bit concerned about how that would work. And then finally, this is a practical matter, it's a little bit unclear how homelessness would be determined. I know there are some definitions in the bill, but it's important to know that the GED examiners are just proctors. They're paraprofessionals. They're not trained social workers or case managers. And they're not really trained to provide the kind of intake or assessment that might be necessary to really determine whether somebody was homeless or not. So that determination would, again, require expertise and time that they don't have that would add to the cost of the overall testing system. So we really believe it's in the interest of every adult Minnesotan who doesn't have a high school diploma to be able to get a GED. We hope to really be able to work with Representative Hornstein and the committee in the future to provide funding for all people to take it. And we would just request, if this is passed, that there be financing attached to the bill so that it will meet the cost of providing the service. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the testifier hit on the point I was going to ask. Representative Hornstein, you mentioned that this bill did go forward last biennium, but there were some funding issues at the end of the day. Do you have a fiscal note on your previously drafted bill, and if you remember the number that was estimated for this waiver?
Mr. Chair, Representative Diskins, I do not. I don't know if Mr. Ayers has that information. And I just know that the bill was laid over for possible inclusion in the education finance omnibus bill, and I think at the end of the day it was not included. But I don't recall the fiscal note.
Emily, do you?
Yeah, Chair and members, we're currently waiting on a fiscal note for this language. And there, if I remember correctly, there was a fiscal note in process for the previous bill, but it was never completed either. There were some questions that the agency had, and I think it got to the point where it wasn't included, so it was never completed then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to staff, as fiscal analyst, as I read the language here, it would seem fairly evident to me that the fiscal note would say zero impact to the state, zero impact to local units of government, because as was mentioned by the testifier, it doesn't say the commissioner has to pick up the fee. It says that the commissioner can waive the fee. So I'm hoping that as a fiscal note is being prepared, that it will have a notation as to what the approximate cost of this is going to be and how that, you know, I know the bill doesn't determine how the cost is going to be carried. Is it going to be the testing institute that carries the cost? Is it going to be the other test takers, et cetera? That's wide open. But if there is an estimate in that fiscal note, that'd be really appreciated. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hornstein, for bringing this forward. My sister dropped out of school when she was 17, and she went back and got her GED, and then subsequently she went back to a community college, and not to sound condescending, but we were more proud of her than she probably was, so it was fantastic. To the testifier, you're talking about other states that subsidize the fee entirely. Do you know what the neighboring states do?
No, I'm sorry, I don't have the specific information. I was just told by our ADE office that some states are choosing to take this. I could get a list for you, but I don't have it right now.
That, Mr. Chair, that'd be helpful. The other thing, Representative Hornstein and Representative Biskins talked about this a little bit. On line 1.11, the commissioner may waive the fee. Is that a may and not a must so that we can evaluate, or the commissioner would then have the ability to evaluate how much money is available? And if we're flush with cash, which we know we're not this year, but if we're flush with cash, that this could possibly click on and off, the commissioner would be able to decide that then. Is that the intent there?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton, this is definitely permissive language, and so there's clearly some flexibility written into the bill in terms of when and how and if the commissioner would waive these fees. And so clearly that would have to be determined, the circumstances. All we have here is a definition of homelessness. But I do look forward to the day when we will be able to have a little bit more uniform approach in terms of how we administer these fees and these tests, to the point where we can maximize the number of people taking these tests without financial impact. That's the intent of the bill. But right now it's simply permissive language, and it's not a requirement.
Thank you.
Representative Hornstein, maybe we need to go back to the first testifier, but he was stating some numbers about the number of homeless people, the percentage who did not have a high school diploma or GED. And it seems to me when you parse them down, you get to about 1,500. Was that right? The test card is right behind you.
Mr. Chair, maybe
Representative
Jackson, Mr. Ayers may be able to come and help out on this.
The total number of people in the 2006 survey that did not have a GED was 1,500. And I work in the shelter as well, and I spoke with a number of housing advocates, and they actually are estimating that about 10 to 20% of those individuals would actually be able or willing or wanting to move forward and follow up with their GED. So it's really a small number.
So we're talking about 150 to 200 people?
The 9,300, which is the homeless in Minnesota's total number, that's a one-night snapshot.
Okay.
And Wilder does not provide data for how many people experience homelessness on a given year. The estimates are, and this is an extremely rough estimate, but it would be around 4,000 or 5,000 that would be that would list as eligible for the CED. 10 to 20% of that would be my kind of back of the envelope estimate was about 400 to 800.
Okay.
That would be eligible and possibly wanting to take this.
And the test is $50 to $100 depending on where?
$50 to $100 depending on
okay.
where.
Okay. Well, that actually gives a pretty good guesstimate of the cost, and it's relatively low for the, what you get back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Representative Hornstein, do you want to say anything?
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you very much for hearing this bill, and I think Representative Coolidge-Jackson summarized it well. This is a very important step for many people. There's a real need for this, and it's a very cost-effective way to really for people to take the first step towards self-sufficiency. And I think it's needed, and I think can really make a difference in people's lives. And so that's why I'm carrying the bill and appreciate your support.
Thank you. I agree with you, and I think it saves us money down the line by getting them stabilized and educated. So I move my glasses. I renew the motion that House File 1324 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Baseball.
Mr. Chair, actually basketball this time of year, huge in Cincinnati, with Xavier University seated fourth in the NCAA tournament.
Chair?
East region.
Hamilton.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious, are there any professional teams in Ohio?
Representative Peterson? You're right.
It's the oldest team we ever
found. Welcome, Representative. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move Bill House File 1430 to be included in the Omnibus Early Childhood Finance Bill.
Thank you. Proceed with the testimony, please.
And this is truly an exciting bill, and for those of you who wait till the end, we even have a surprise announcement. So is that an incentive to get you to wait till the end of our presentation? But this is a bill that I think addresses an issue of need, that I've seen at least as we survey the early childhood landscape and we deal with all the different components of early childhood. And I've known Marcy Brooks, who is our speaker today. She's the director of the Working Families Resource Center, and I knew her way back when she was a teacher, an early childhood teacher. I think she was a therapist also, maybe, or at least a psychologist, and worked with young children. And she was in the St. Paul companies, and she worked with, she had an early childhood center in a business center for all of the workers' children. And so I first got to know her. I was so impressed with her creativity and the way she dealt with the parents and the students in that center. And then I lost track of her until about a year, about 6 months ago, maybe 2 months ago. And she said, let me tell you what I'm doing now. And I was just amazed, because one of the things she was doing involved my district with the Business Liberty Diversified, as well as the ECFE program in my district. And I was really impressed with the kind of nonprofit that she is running and the kind of staff that she has to complement this particular endeavor. And I think it fills a real need for working families, and for particularly, I think, the family, friends, and neighbors, but also all parents who are so short of time and need to have contact with some sort of education about what they can do with their young children. And so I'm going to leave it up to Marcy to talk a bit more about what her particular program does. And then she has a couple of other speakers from her foundation, and she'll talk more about that.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
And she may want to introduce the other people she has here also.
Great.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paul Rosenthal, and Madam Representative Sandy Peterson. Thank you. My name is Marcy Brooks, and I am the Executive Director of the Working Family Resource Center, and I thank you for allowing me to come in and testify before your committee today on this very important topic. I do have with me Beth Crist, who is our Director of Education, and I will introduce, I have Peg Lindlock behind me, who is our educational consultant, and she's also the president of our advisory council. And I have two board members with me, Diane Kirkman, who is the Executive Director of the National Council on Family Relations, and also Claire Bay, who is with the Big Brothers and Big Sisters.
You're well prepared.
Thank you very much. Education begins at birth. Parents are a child's first and foremost teacher, even after a child enters a formal learning environment. Minnesota has worked extremely hard to raise awareness and support for early education, and the Working Family Resource Center works with different ECFE and early childhood programs, and we are extremely grateful for Minnesota's endeavors in this very, very important topic. The years between 0 and 5 are the most critical years for success in school and in life. The missing link to success in school is often the parent education piece. Children can be in the best childcare settings, meeting all the quality indicators for success and qualifying for parent-aware star rating systems. Yet those precious children go home to their parents who love them more than anything, and they are their first and foremost teacher, and yet they may not have the knowledge and skills that many of the caregivers have given, and they do not have know some of the appropriate ways to deal with their children. Working families are exhausted, worried, especially in today's economic environment, and at times like this, time is a precious commodity to them, and all families are at risk. Why family education? Families have changed in today's environment. Parents are not always married. Dual-income families are the economic norm. Ethnic and racial differences are common. Drugs and violence impact many families. Children may have 6 to 8 grandparents due to remarriage. And more grandparents are still in the workforce and or live at a distance and are not able to be a part of the family unit and help them. The change which is most non-normative is the dramatic increase in parents and caregivers in the worksite. Why family education at the worksite? Families lack time and proximity to share with one another. Not all parents have extended family to help them. More than 77% of Minnesota's adult women are in the workforce. And according to the Wilder Institute, a study that was done about 3-4 years ago, 80% of our children in Minnesota are cared for by a family, friend, or neighbor. Men want work-family balance as well as women and children. Parents are able to learn more during their work day because their children are in child care or in school. They are well cared for during this time, and transportation is not an issue. They are at the work site, the time is there for them, and they can do this over their noontime, oftentimes in a brown bag seminar, but we also do this on shift workers, for shift workers, at various times during the 24-hour cycle. Today's jobs do affect the stability of marriage. Again, the shift work piece, multiple jobs that people have to have due to meet the needs of their family, travel that working parents have for traveling here or there, or both spouses traveling, and the courses that we teach help families to strengthen their communication and their pieces to work together. Families are busier than they ever have been. Well, I don't know about that, but their families are very, very busy today. Current and future employees are competing globally, not just with peers in the United States. And with technology, the worksite is really everywhere. The demands of a 24/7 lifestyle make it difficult to access family education in the community. What does WFRC have to offer? The Working Family Resource Center, which I refer to as WFRC, has 24 years of experience as part of St. Paul Public Schools Community Education Department And now, as an independent nonprofit 501c3, working in businesses to offer parent and family life education for these past 2 years. The Working Family Resource Center has the tools to assist families where they have the time to listen. We have established a reputation of collaborating with employers, families, and the public sector. It is a cost-sharing model that provides research-based best practices in family education, so it is a win-win for everyone, the child, the family, the schools, the businesses, and our communities. WFRC can reach low-income parents and businesses earning low margins, but we need financial partners. We have some support from foundations and other donations. We also receive fees for service from many employers. With the economic downturn, businesses have fewer discretionary dollars to work with, and foundations also have less grant money available. For example, our Early Learning Counts. This is a program that was developed. We were attempting to find out as we worked with different people in the State Department on family, friend, and neighbors, and the difficulty to be able to reach these people. We back at the Working Family Resource Center said, well, who uses family, friend, and neighbor? And those are the parents who are working in the workplace. So we created Early Learning Counts, and I have some materials that I will share with you, where we went in and piloted this in businesses, manufacturing, some of the businesses that have lower wage workers, and put on a seminar that I would like to be for everybody about early childhood and how important our children are. Whether we have children, our children are grown, or whatever, it's about our children. And in this seminar, we talk about the latest brain development. We talk about the stages of development, age-appropriate behaviors. We talk about nutrition and health. And what the Working Family Resource Center did was put together a packet of information for the working parents with information that could be easily accessible to them, and then also a packet for them to take back home to whomever is caring for their child, be it grandma, aunt, neighbor, friend, it didn't matter. But in it, there's appropriate materials that have been created, wonderful materials that are research-based done by Ready for K, the Minnesota Department of Public Health, the Minnesota Department of Education, and those materials have been put there to take back home to whomever is caring for the children to help them to understand the importance of this early education and the knowledge that we have. The Working Family Resource Center believes parents are a child's first and foremost teacher. The years between birth and age 5 are critical for the success in school and in life. We also believe parent education enhances parents' effectiveness in supporting their children's emotional, social, and academic development. The missing link into success in school is often the parent education piece. All families are at risk. The collaborations and partnerships with other organizations enhance the success for each one of us. Quality current research-based information and constant evaluation are critical to the success of family education at the worksite. Family education at the worksite is for everyone. In difficult times, family education at the worksite is the most critical, or even more critical. I ask you to support this bill that Madam Representative Sandy Peterson has brought forward, which would allow us to serve working families at the worksite. We believe that this cost-sharing approach leverages our work so that all families can do better in today's world. I would like to introduce
and even before she speaks, I'm going to ask you to address just three things real quickly.
Yes.
You talked about
webinar, you talked about your adjunct staff, and you also talked about other states. Can you just address those three?
Certainly. In the last 2 years, since we left, or we really didn't leave St. Paul Public Schools Community Education Department, we still partner and work together on different programs. But because of our nonprofit status, we were able to go into Greater Minnesota, and in the last 2 years, we have a presence now in 30 states receiving our education through webinars. And Michael Burkett, who is also on our staff, there are three full-time staff members, I would like you to know. And then we have two part-time individuals, and then we have over 130 educated family life educators, certified family life educators, and licensed parent educators who deliver our education at the work site for these people. So the webinars is something that Michael, he's of a different generation than I, and I have a difficult time in that. So any questions would have to be directed to him.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I am Beth Quist, and I am the Director of Education and Development for the Working Family Resource Center. I've been asked to speak a little bit about the companies that we work with, and as Marcy has stated, becoming an independent nonprofit, and through our use of technology, we have actually grown quite immensely in 2 years. 13 families and parents in over 30 states across the nation. So it's been a very steep climb for us in the learning curve, but it's been wonderful in getting our education out to more and more parents and working families. I work directly with the companies, customizing programs to meet their employees' needs, which vary immensely from company to company. We work on average with over 100 companies on an annual basis, and we provide the parent and family life education at the work site where it's convenient to the employee and where we have a captive audience already present. We give them research-based information to help them manage the various challenges of being a parent, being a family member, being a neighbor, being a community member, even being a volunteer, whatever their life role entails. We provide education to help them support and manage those daily challenges. So some of the examples of our direct service clients that we work with, I'd just like to give you a few examples. We work with Procurian Financial, Target Corporation, the Veterans Affairs Medical Center. We also work with a variety of counties, Ramsey, Washington, and Scott County. And in working with companies, we remain very flexible in our method of delivery. One thing that we have done in the past 4 years is we've actually brought companies together who maybe were not willing to go out on that limb and say, we're going to provide family life education for our employees. We've brought companies together to share educational resources and services. One example of this is our Minneapolis Coalition, where Wells Fargo and Xcel Energy actually come together twice a month to deliver educational seminars to their employees. On any given seminar, we have anywhere from 200 up to 700 participants. We also provide service to employers who do not have a typical 8-to-5 Monday through Friday workday, such as Liberty Diversified Industries. Liberty Diversified is one of those employers who operates 3 different shifts in a manufacturing environment, and as Marcy Brooks stated, we have gone in and delivered at various times of the day to parents where they're captive and it's convenient. What I continuously hear is the evaluation and feedback, which we do on every single seminar we do, and we do on an average about 500 a year, is that parents especially are grateful to have access to education and programs that they otherwise could not access due to working during the day or working the whatever shift and their other commitments outside of work. We are making a difference in their lives and ultimately in the lives of their children.
Thank you. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you very much. Your enthusiasm is remarkable for this, and I got to tell you, Representative Peterson's enthusiasm for this is remarkable as well, as she has talked to me about it and also shared with me a little bit about your curriculum and things that you do give to parents. I heard you say that you're in Greater Minnesota, and then I heard some of my question was going to be, can you tell me some of the businesses that you've connected with? And you raised some of those, and then as you suggested, some of those businesses, they're pretty significant sized corporations. Can you share with us, please, some of the areas in Greater Minnesota that you are? And, you know, a lot of smaller cities or towns don't have big corporate businesses. Are you in any small communities that have a mom-and-pa business or family-run business or anything on that nature?
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you for your question. Yes, we have been working these last 2 years with the ability to work. We just put on a breakfast seminar for 17 business leaders in the Mankato area, and we also are working right now with the Southwest Initiative Foundation to be able to deliver to their constituents and families down in that area information on the education that we have. We're doing some programs right now having to do with family resiliency, that has to do with finances, has to do with nutrition and diet, and also has to do with the social emotional pieces. And what we are doing is delivering these at this time on the webinar basis to these families in that area. So we are just collecting data on that piece, but we also have, through Michael, a message board that our instructor is able to go on and answer questions from the people down in southwestern Minnesota to do this. And we're continuing to work with other, we're constantly looking to partner in different areas. We have a couple grants out to work in the Hutchinson area and in some manufacturing places. As stated, we have worked a lot with large corporations, and we really would like to get into Greater Minnesota and into some of the other areas with that have the little community or the small community or the large community is based on one or two businesses, and be able to offer this type of education at their workplace for their employees. And that's the piece where we are needing more assistance in doing.
Representative Ward. Just, Mr. Chair, a quick follow-up. You're welcome to Brainerd, Baxter City, Crosby, Nisswa, anytime you want.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for coming and for your enthusiasm. How big is your organization? What's the overall budget, and how is it funded? What are the funding sources, and how much comes from various sources?
Mr. Chair and Representative, our funding sources come from three places. Fee-for-service from the business that are participating, contributions and donations from individuals, and the third one is from foundations and grants. Those are three, and our budget is approximately $512,000. And as I stated, our staff is comprised of three full-time, two part-time. We have one educational consultant. We have an advisory council of volunteers, of which Peg Lindlof, whom I introduced before as the president, and we have a board of directors of 15 members of the board of directors. And then we have over 138 licensed, credentialed instructors that are paid to go into the businesses and deliver this education.
Quick follow-up. Obviously there's hundreds of organizations like yours out there, and maybe a question for you, Representative Peterson. Is it the stimulus funding that's maybe driving this request in this bill? What would be unique about this organization as compared to all the other ones that we could bring before this committee to offer $25,000 to?
Well, first of all, I think this is a little bit unique. We've listened to many, many programs, but I don't know of any others that really go into the workplace and have an established program that really reaches into those parents, particularly the family, friends, and neighbors. But yes, we are looking for potentially stimulus dollars, and that's what, and I think that even says in the bill, we're looking for stimulus dollars. I know the nonprofit has also worked with United Way, and United Way has helped them with getting some materials, because as we have some packets to show, it does cost money to do some of the materials, to get the information ready. You know, and any time you're running this kind of business, it does cost something. And I think it's still run pretty much on a shoestring with the amount of staff they have, et cetera. But it is stimulus dollars that we're looking for, and also a chance to let you know what a wonderful program this is, I think, for reaching parents, particularly those low income, but all parents who are in the workplace. That's one place where they will take time to listen. And I noticed in one of the brochures that talked about what are kids expected to know when they enter kindergarten? What are those kinds of skills that we will expect? And for many parents, that's an aha. And one of the brochures dealt with literacy skills. I know that one of the sessions is a whole session on literacy. How do you deal with helping children learn how do you read books to children? What's the importance of reading to children at that age? And I know they could go on and on with the kinds of programs that they offer, but that's a long answer to a very short question. Thank you.
Thank you.
May I please address, also add to that, your
Absolutely.
Question? Yes, one of the things that we have found is that the parents oftentimes are the ones that do not get the training or the education or the experience that our Head Start teachers, our early childhood teachers, our child care centers, and that's part of the reason we're attempting to take this information into the homes of the family, friends, and neighbors. And there's a disconnect when a child is in this wonderful environment where they're being stimulated and those things are known, and then they go back home into this this family environment that they do not have all the skills for that. And sometimes when we're extremely busy, some of the stories that we've heard, you know, they wouldn't have to be like that, because when people get information, they make better decisions about this. And that's one of the reasons. And a side story to that is a mother and father working at a manufacturing company. They both were working opposite shifts, so they didn't have to pay for child care. And the mother, they had a son in six years old in school, and he was struggling terribly and just hated school, and it was awful for them when they get ready to send the child to school. Now they have a four-year-old that's going to school, and she's dreading having him go. And she took this one seminar that early learning counts, and she said, and with almost tears in her eyes, she said to the instructor, "I had no idea that if I read, or we read to our child 20 minutes a day, it could make a difference in his life." So, and the other part I would like to address is that we really want to work and collaborate, partner with everybody that is doing this. It's not just about the Working Family Resource Center. We really want and do collaborate with many, many different organizations, but to be able to bring this type of education into the work site for working families. Thank you.
Representative Norna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think Representative Peterson. The question, does this organization, or have they ever received any state funding, and I guess what is the significance of $25,000?
Mr. Chair and Representative Bernardes, no, they've never gotten any state funding. And all their funding up till now has been, as she said, with businesses, donations, grants, etc. The economy is difficult right now, and the opportunity to perhaps expand this program does exist. And again, $25,000 doesn't go a long way when you're looking at materials and expanding the program. But again, I think it's worth the money. So the issue will be, is the money going to be there, and will it be through the stimulus program that we can get any of those dollars? But we'll try, and it's putting at least a program out there to say this is a worthwhile program to address.
Any other questions from members? Representative Peterson, do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would renew my motion to move this bill, House File 1430, to be included into the early childhood finance bill.
So moved. And this meeting is adjourned.